Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 36, Teaching the Saints, Part 8. We live in a time of top 10 lists and 5-star ratings and things like that, so I would be remiss, of course, not to give you a list of, 10 top saints, or the ones who've received 5-star ratings, or the most likes, that sort of thing. And I don't know if I'm going to make it to the top 10, but at least we'll get a few stories that I believe, from my experience, and also the experience of my own colleagues in my school and many teachers that I've observed. Here are some saint stories which, are able to go deeply into, I'd say, what is truly Christian in a saint or in human behavior altogether, without being parochial or sectarian, or without seeming like they're going to be converting children or something like that. So that's, I think that's important. Number two, in pretty much all of these saints' stories that I'm going to enumerate, there's a quality about them of charm and endearment. They are, there's a quality to stories about saints that is very hard to find replicated in any other kinds of stories, certainly not the Norse stories, and there's nothing terribly endearing about the Hebrew scriptures either, though they are powerful and important. The saint stories, the only writer who comes really close to this is probably Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens can present individuals who are convincing and who really draw us along, and often have these kind of just wonderful, loving, saintly qualities. Other than that, you've got to go back to the sources, to the real saints and the way in which they were described. And I'd say all of these figures are like this. And also, most of them have a holiday associated with them, which we generally will either celebrate in school or with which the children are familiar in one way or another, so you're giving them sort of the backstory for that celebration. And I'm always interested, actually, how many Waldorf public schools have kept these celebrations, these festival events going, even though, they're in a certain way by no means required for in a public school. So that's some aspects of these stories, why I would say these are good saints. And this is not in order, not that this is the best and the others aren't. But I'll give it to you a little bit in something of chronological order. Saint Patrick, though you probably would want to wait till the spring, around March 17th, to be sure, to speak about him. So that's a wonderful one, Saint Patrick. Saint Jerome is another early saint. I'll be going into a little more detail about them momentarily. Saint Nicholas is on the early side. So is Bridget, who was a contemporary of St. Patrick, or I won't say quite contemporary, but I believe that they were alive at the same time in Ireland. At least they're generally ascribed to be so. She was much younger than he, however. And then for saints who are a little bit, well, another actually early one, St. Martin. And then we have St. Lucy, also fairly early. Among these, the only really later saints that I'm listing are St. Elizabeth and St. Francis, who I would say probably is a good candidate to be the last of the saints that you tell about, even though his day is in October. And in some cities, such as New York City, There's a very large cathedral in New York. It's actually the largest Gothic cathedral in the world. It's not Catholic, it's Episcopalian. And this is the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, located near Columbia University on New York's Upper West Side. And there on, in early October, on the day of St. Francis, they do what churches do on a usually fairly small scale, the blessing of the animals, in which people bring their pets and they are blessed in the name of St. Francis, who was the saint most remembered for his connection with the animal world, though, as we've heard, by no means the only saint to have this connection. But what's wonderful about St. John the Divine is that actually zookeepers and circus people bring their animals, and you never know what you're going to see in there. You know, giraffes and elephants and a rhino, who knows what people are going to show up with in addition to their little, you know, New York City apartment dwelling dogs. It's a very, very beautiful event. So certainly you can talk to the children about that and say, you know, we're going to learn about why this is done, but we're not going to hear about it till the end of the year. And all year long, children will be saying to you, when are we going to hear about why the animals got blessed? Or, you know, by then it might be, when are we going to hear about the saint who blessed the elephants, or that sort of thing? So it's really nice to sort of bring that. So once again, I think I have 7 or 8 saints here that I would say, try to teach these saints, and you probably can't go wrong. St. Patrick, St. Francis, St. Bridget, I don't think I mentioned her. Yes, I did, contemporary of Patrick. St. Elizabeth, St. Martin, St. Jerome, St. Nicholas, and St. Lucy, Santa Lucia. So we've got I think a pretty good gender fairness here. 1, 2, 3 women and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 men. Yeah, that's pretty good, right? Huh? It's like, you know, it's better than CEOs of major corporations in America in terms of the proportion of women who are there. And of course, this is not to say this is all you need to teach, though I would say, again, if you're in a public school and there's a lot of pressure to downplay this sort of thing, you could probably squeeze all 8 of these saints in there one way or another, and at least maybe 5 or 6 of them. And if you're in an independent school where it's pretty much up to you how many saints you're going to bring, this would just be sort of a foundation group. And part of the joy of teaching the saints, which I hope you experience this summer, is just finding these old books, you know, written in the late 19th century or the early 20th century, finding them in one form or another, and discovering saints and discovering, you know, obscure saints who have incredible stories. And usually the stories are pretty incredible. And what you're going to be impressed with, as I mentioned earlier, is how many of these saints are choleric, how very, very few of them are just sort of little meek creatures accepting the world as it is and, you know, simply living in the radiance of God, that actually, if you are going to be a truly good person, you've got to bring that goodness into your actions. And that's what the saints teach us. And they also make us recognize the truth of what Steiner said, that if we are going to bring the divine into the physical world, if we are going to help the world evolve and to really become more and more true to the principle of as above, so below, we need cholerics. The stories of the saints should make us as teachers and the children themselves in the classroom appreciate individuals who are not always easy, not always predictable, who can be very impulsive because, of course, they're carrying a body that is not their own. They don't know what it's going to leave them to do from one moment to the next. And you realize that there's a real connection here between such individualities and the cholerics that you have in your class. I want to mention to you that all of these saints and a number of others besides, for example, Saint Christopher and the other stories that I mentioned earlier, they generally call for 2 days in the telling. It would be very long, even though the lives are fascinating, but it would take a big chunk out of a morning lesson to just try to do each of these saints in one day only. So you really have to divide it up. You have a Monday telling and a Tuesday telling. And here we come to the heart of something very important, which I speak of quite a bit, especially in the Grade 1 conference. But it's good to repeat it here, especially for those of you who did not take the Grade 1 conference. And that is the 3-day rhythm, which any of you who've been trained in any of the training institutes have heard about this. Others of you have probably heard about it from your mentor, that, you know, you let the children sleep on it for 2 nights, and then if you give a story on Monday, you review it on Wednesday. You retell it on Tuesday. Now, just for you to be aware, there is no place, and I'm not the only one who's looked for it, very, very serious and thorough Waldorf educational scholars such as Stephen Sagarin and, to the best of my knowledge, Astrich Mitch-Stegman from Rudolf Steiner College, they've looked for it. Where does Steiner speak about the 3-day rhythm? And he does speak about 3-day rhythms, but in completely different contexts. He never brought this to the teachers. He never spoke about this as a pedagogical principle. And it's just one of these misunderstandings and traditions that have become then attributed to Rudolf Steiner, one of about 800. And it's not to say, you know, everything that people say he said, he didn't say, that's not true. Mostly people are quoting him and citing him correctly. But this is one that he did not say, and it's not helpful for people to do this. Even in grade one, it is perfectly acceptable for you to ask children questions on Tuesday about what you brought on Monday. And indeed, there may be some children like phlegmatics who will do a little better on Wednesday than they might have done on Tuesday. But basically, most of the children are not going to do any better in terms of their memory awakening on Wednesday morning than they do on Tuesday morning. And it becomes such a logistical issue. So, okay, then whatever I taught on Tuesday, I bring back on Thursday. And whatever we spoke about on Wednesday, I bring on Friday. And then what we did on Thursday, I bring back on Saturday? Sunday? No, the next Monday. And what I brought on Friday, come on, everybody, this is a little bit crazy. And it's, you know, just because it's crazy doesn't mean Steiner said it. There are some crazy things he did not say. And it's again amazing that the tradition becomes so strong, the dogma, I would have to say, becomes so strong, that even very intelligent mentors stop thinking and they just kind of repeat it. You know, like there's no black in the crayon box, no black is allowed. Not true. Steiner never said that. It's become a tradition, but not for any really good reason. So I just bring that because here you are going to be in the same way that you could fit two or even three fables in one main lesson, though I don't suggest you do that, but you definitely cannot fit many saint stories into one main lesson. So what you're going to be doing, for example, in telling the life of Saint Francis, which could take you a week, really, if you're doing it well, certainly 3 to 4 days if you're in a bit of a rush, that every day you have to review what you said the day before. And on Wednesday, you're reviewing what you said on Tuesday and Monday. And on Thursday, you're repeating what you're reviewing, recapitulating what you brought on Wednesday, Tuesday, and Monday. So you're actually here with these stories, taking the children's memory forces another level. You're holding them responsible for more. And this is, again, why you really want to work carefully with the temperaments and, you know, make your own notes when you have the text of the story, what temperament you're going to be directing this towards, where they're sitting in the class, looking at them in one way or another, drawing it to their attention, because those are the children who will be able to most successfully take part in the review. The next day, the day after that, it's not just going to be a 3-day rhythm or even a 2-day rhythm. It's going to be a kind of cycle of recollections about the story that comes back. And at the end of the week, you're going to want to be reading from their books, whatever you wrote that week, which probably in second grade can be 2 to 3 pages of writing in a week. One, maybe two drawings in a given week. The children should be working more quickly now, but no less carefully. But they should be able to really be able, you know, to see what you've drawn and to be working with that. In terms of drawing, please have a look at the video, the instructional video about drawing with children, in which I give you some ideas about that rhythm as well. So, of course, our work on saints is going to be the largest part of the work that we do with our main lesson books or morning lesson books. So, you know, it really opens up the changes that are going on in grade 2 compared to grade 1. And we'll be looking at that as we look at children's artistic work.